I always puzzle over how to start unfolding a talk such as this sermon. Set up definitions, strike a philosophical stance, challenge listeners just a bit to be better. More to my liking is to just take a corner of the quilt and unfold, unroll, shake it, smooth it, point to your favorite panels, then fold it up and see who will take away what and how. But I came up with a different way to proceed. Once upon a time, you knew just how crayons smelled, and some of you, how they tasted, and you could draw cats and fish and pigs and horses and creatures you'd never seen, but certainly lived somewhere that would be cool to visit. You could draw horizons and clouds and all the faces of the sun and the moon as bright as day, happily in a duet with the sun. And either you had a pet or you wanted a pet or you had animals that were stuffed or like the animals who were TV stars, Mr. Ed, and or you thought some animals seemed like people you knew, or you teased people who reminded you of animals, or else you praised people's greatness by calling them animals. Or else you knew the one animal that was special to you and whose life you'd gladly live if it were available to you. Or you cultivated an imaginary animal friend. Or you read, thought, and pursued an imagined life as an animal. Or you dreamt of being the trainer or confidant or pack member of animals. Or of being with people who were more with animals than they were with cities. Or you were ready to be the farmer who always lived just out of town and on lanes that were always fresh and rain-damp, grown closely with lilies, chamomile, asters, hollyhocks, milkweed. Or you read or heard or acted out one book or another about creatures who were alien and wondrous for their being, their strengths, gifts, loyalty, fierceness. Or perhaps you practiced as hard and sometimes with more success being an animal as you did being a person. And sometimes in family or school, animals, real or otherwise, seemed more closely related to you than were all the humans. Perhaps you too traveled far, almost over a year, to where the wild things are. And when you came to the place where the wild things are, they roared their terrible roars and gnashed their terrible teeth and rolled their terrible eyes and showed their terrible claws. So, that was one way I thought about how to start this service. So now we can continue. One of my true life mentors, those whose influence becomes even greater as time passes, was Dr. John Brantner, from whose work today's reading was drawn. I realize his is the influence that moved me to give this talk and has encouraged me to find the niches and handholds in both career and family worlds that have given the greatest hope. And has moved me to appreciate how our pets and their wild relatives who live all around us are collectively the greatest mentors we will ever know, as well as being part of our extended families and of the great family of all life. I still remember the pattern of the blanket in which we buried the older of the two dogs who joined my parents' marriage before children did. Much of our old house is vague, you know, like an odor or a feeling, but the kitchen window and the grave beneath it remain sharp some 50 years on. And so many animals since then, some transient in the family, yet a core who were major participants in the fabric of family living. We joke and have grieved lovingly about losing the dog, the cat, who helped raise the children. And all of our adult children now have their own cherished, eccentric, and proper pets. And I doubt that my marriage was the only one in which finding a pet was a crucial preparation for the first child. I've heard it said that the aim was to first spoil the dog and then parent the child. I suspect it was simply to practice the skills of incorporating messy, noisy, insistent, irritating, and needy presences into the adult's world and to be charmed and enthused doing so. It worked for us, mostly. So pets teach much about nurturance, fidelity, warmth, and empathy. Over tens of thousands of years of domestication, thinking of dogs and all the other animals with which we have such close ties, there is a suppression of aggression, expansion of emotional bonds, and greater loyalty. New research finds in close animal-human interactions a strong synchronization of hormones such as oxytocin, which is associated with bonding and caregiving. When I do genograms, family maps, in patient care or with the education of physicians in training, I always put pets on the genogram to better understand the webs of sharing, care, and inclusion that grow within each family. Sometimes I have learned how remarkably bright and successful people readily affirm how much guidance and support they had received from the animals in the home. Other times I have learned how a young survivor of violence may suppress or minimize his or her abuse, yet speak with greatest anguish and clarity of how pets were abused or even killed in the family. It was a wondrous coincidence just this past week for me to find that Harbor House is moving towards having pets on site, in largest part out of concern for how some children in families of violence have greatest bonding and comfort from pets. This is a lesson taught also by those combat veterans for whom animal nature is so much more tractable, trustworthy, and genuine than is human society during combat, as well as in the midst of the superficiality and deceptions of civilian life. The poet Mary Oliver tells us about her dog, Percy, who has lived well despite kidney disease. I'll just say it. I can't channel her. Percy wakes me, and I am not ready. He has slept all night under the covers. Now he's eager for action, a walk, then breakfast. So I hasten up. He is sitting on the kitchen counter, where he's not supposed to be. How wonderful you are, I say. How clever, if you needed me, to wake me. He thought he would hear a lecture, and deeply his eyes begin to shine. He tumbles onto the couch for more compliments. He squirms and squeals. He has done something that he needed, and now he hears that it is okay. I scratch his ears. I turn him over and touch him everywhere. He is wild with the okayness of it. Then we walk. Then he has breakfast. And he is happy. This is a poem about Percy. This is a poem about more than Percy. Think about it. Programs in correctional facilities for inmates to retrain abused dogs have shown evidence of perhaps also retraining and centering those inmates who participate. Some such companionship and emotional synchrony has come to be appreciated more and more among psychotherapists and those who train dogs and other animals. A couple of years ago, I was privileged to meet two crisis response dogs who are trained to become more relaxed yet attentive in high-stress situations and to remain close and attentive with crisis workers and or victims, both of whom may need centering and a sense of safety. This is just one of the latest iterations in the growth of ways that we collaborate with animals. Pet ownership, recent research, has been correlated with improved self-esteem for the humans. Exercise levels, conscientiousness, attachment, and coping with social rejection. There is also a growing evidence base for diverse approaches to animal-assisted therapies to benefit psychological as well as medical outcomes. Animal-assisted approaches may involve horses, dogs, dolphins, to just name a few. I hear you're going to be getting chickens in Appleton. Is that right? Relationship is everything. And indeed, it seems relationships are crucial, that of the human learner and the animal, but also those relationships of the animal trainer who may be called to develop empathy for both person and animal in order for them to develop their own empathy and their animal-human dance of relaxation, tension, and hormone patterns. But there's mystery here, too. Just as modern medicine dismissed folk remedies, only to find that new pharmaceuticals were often discovered right in those traditional remedies, there may soon be new medical tests based on the acuities of dogs and cats. And I don't mean CAT scans. The first marketed statin drug was isolated in the Chinese folk remedy red yeast rice. The FDA found it was still in there 15 years ago, and they decided, oh my gosh, someone's selling prescription medicine without approval. So they said if red yeast rice is sold, it has to have the statins removed in the U.S. I'm not sure that anyone has done that yet, but I just found that rather ironic. Digitalis was extracted from the foxglove flower in similar fashion. Going back to things we observe that have powers greater than we understand, some dogs can detect the precursors of seizures in epileptics or can detect early indicators of hypoglycemia in diabetics. The modality for such perceptions is not yet clear, though it has been speculated to be stimuli as simple as posture, movement, or facial changes, or as subtle as detection of chemical changes via smell. Such detection is now the focus of increasing research on canine ability to learn accurate detection of several forms of cancer. Just in the past 8 years, there have been exploratory studies that document dogs' success detecting ovarian, bladder, breast, prostate, bowel, and lung cancers. Not to be upstaged by, and these are in mainstream medical journals. So there's a British Medical Journal had what's called a proof of principle study. In other words, if I can train three of you to levitate at the same time, and we can repeat it, that's proof of principle. I don't think I can, but that would be proof of principle. Not to be upstaged by canine extroversion and sniffing, there is also Oscar the cat. Oscar was adopted by nursing home staff of an advanced dementia unit and has demonstrated the ability to detect those who are in the final stages of life. At such times, Oscar alights on a patient's bed and stays only when that patient is on the verge of death. Following are comments from the New England Journal of Medicine of 2007. Oscar's mere presence is viewed by physicians and nursing home staff as an almost absolute indicator of impending death, allowing staff members to adequately notify families. Oscar has also provided companionship to those who would otherwise have died alone. For his work, he is highly regarded by the physicians and staff of the unit and by the families of the residents whom he serves. So now we're in the midst of mystery. Among those animals whom we think of as lesser domesticated beings and very secondary to our greater acumen and intellect, and among the creatures who pass around under, over, and through our everyday world, those creatures, what about them, who know patterns, follow geomagnetic compasses, track seasonal changes in ways we are not privy to, and talk in complex language and dialects such as those of bees and whales. Just as we do not know yet how the placebo effect works or how many of our medical therapies work, we do not yet know what our dogs, cats, and all other animal siblings might have to teach. Just as we risk annihilating wisdom and diverse lessons from wild places and peoples, we risk becoming numb to wonder and great talent right under our noses, as it were. So not only are dogs and cats smarter than we give them credit for, so are crows. Recent research finds remarkable recognition among crows of human facial features and apparently good ability to pass on how to recognize difficult humans, such as those who have removed baby crows from nests to band them for population studies. If such scientists wear masks, then the mask will provoke loud crow protests if worn by others. And those loud protests can occur communities away, miles away, and for months or years after the original provocation, suggesting that human facial characteristics are communicated in some fashion. A culture or a Facebook for crows. Crows have done very well in a world overrun by humankind, but so do Canada geese and sandhill cranes. I was running on the trail, and just as I came alongside the edge of a large cornfield, thinking and thinking about this very point in the sermon, my thoughts halted as my mind blanked, emptied and overridden by a sandhill crane's single squawk. Up close, hidden behind the brush along the trail, a grating, dinosaur-like sound, but just one note, one syllable, one sudden startle. I agree, I would put this in my sermon. Timing is everything. It stopped me dead in my tracks, and it was very needed. And these wild creatures are not our pets, these whom I know and salute as I run beneath the tree where the thrush or the veery may sing, or when I see egrets and herons living with their elegance. In their world, I am perhaps their pet, and I aspire to stay at their tables in order to hear their voices, so good and pure and accepting. Dr. Brantner went on to caution his graduating veterinarians. We may be moving toward a world with fewer and fewer species of life, a world in which all claims fall before the claims of human beings, whose tendency toward arrogance and selfishness will then be unchecked. A world in which we become less humane and perhaps even less human because we have left behind or alienated ourselves from our civilizing companions. So, do all in your power to bring us closer to an appreciation of what naturalist and educator Joseph Woodcrutch called the great chain of life. Remind us not of our mastery, but of our interdependence. Ask us once in a while to consider the possibility that maybe there is no life on other planets around other suns, and that maybe life on the planet Earth is all the life there is in the entire universe. In any event, help us to learn that we are stewards and not greedy inheritors. So finally, it's clear that animals in our home and in our shared world have much to teach with their lives, but perhaps more to teach as death approaches. The dementing elder who can recall the names of those horses who pulled the plow and the wagon 70 years ago, but little else. My uncle, sadly declining, yet greatly comforted and always attended by and devoted to his little dog. The merciful euthanasia of our old guide dog, Johnny, a former orphan, gently relieved of pain in dappled sun with favorite treats, family blanket, attentive care by a veterinarian who talked all of us through it. The death of little Lucy, also a wandering soul who ran the house for nearly 10 years. Family at bedside, veterinarian having given over days to puzzle how to maintain her life, but then joining us together for a goodbye and then our returns to the workaday world. These are perhaps small deaths in some schemes of things, but they can stand as losses that affirm what we have cherished and what has nurtured and challenged in wondrous ways. And these deaths were far preferable to some human deaths in some human institutions. Oscar would have approved. We'll close with Mary Oliver's memorial poem for Percy, 2002 to 2009. This, I said to Percy when I had left our bed and gone out onto the living room couch where he found me apparently doing nothing, this is called thinking. It's something people do, not being entirely children of the earth, like a dog or a tree or a flower. His eyes questioned such an activity. Well, okay, he said, if you say so, whatever it is. Actually, I like kissing better. And next to me, tucked down his curly head and sweet as a flower, slept.